Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series.
My guest today is Jay Dewani, co-founder and chief executive officer of Lumerian Labs, where he leads the company's mission to reinvent AI infrastructure for greater efficiency, accessibility, and performance. With a background spanning AI system architecture, hardware software co-design, and performance optimization, Dewani has built AI-powered systems for autonomous vehicles, spaceflight, and large-scale model deployment. Before founding Lumerian Labs in 2022, he advised on NASA's Mars Rover program at Geometric Energy, focusing on vision-based navigation and planetary mapping. A frequent speaker and commentator, Jay is passionate about shaping AI infrastructure to broaden access, accelerate innovation, and unlock new frontiers in intelligent computing. Welcome to the podcast, Jay.
Thanks for having me, Danny.
Yeah, first, may I ask what brought you to co-founding Lumerian Labs? It sounds like an interesting story.
A series of fortunate accidents is the best way to describe it. Running up against problems standing in the way, usually. So you think about starting early on, thinking a lot about how to even build an intelligent system. How do you think about training them, the amount of data you need to train them, the amount of computational intensity, like training a very, very large model, at least at the time, it was considered very large, but today's standards, it's fairly small. But thinking about just a 20 billion parameter model, you know, 8 years ago, that could essentially do the entire sense, plan, act loop for an autonomous system deployed in the wild would require, you know, a few thousand GPUs and several months of training time and then more months of validation time. And that was just way too expensive to even consider in most cases. So you had to be right. So you take a safer bet usually. And it just didn't make sense to me because I'm like, the promise of autonomous systems is very, very obvious. And it's not like we technically don't know how to get there. It's just that we don't have the right set of breakthroughs that have allowed us to bring the cost into a certain place to allow us to innovate on them in the way we should. And that sort of drove the trajectory for most of my career. And then eventually I started thinking a lot more about hardware because I was considering joining a certain chip company at the time. And I started getting this feeling that, you know, the inference workload for an autonomous system is going to be fairly different from how a GPU works. Right? GPUs are designed for predictable memory access, for high throughput, aggressive batching, and for largely compute-bound workloads. But if you look at a system at the edge, you know, you basically have an SoC and you want the entire workload fitting on this device and you care a lot about latency. You want to be processing like a terabyte per second over multiple interfaces. And you want to be running this massive model running 60 frames a second and so on and so forth. And that just didn't exist. And I felt like that was a thing I was holding back the industry from getting to where it was supposed to be.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, the industry's answer to AI's compute demands has been bigger chips, of course, you know, more chips, more power. Lumerian's bet is that this curve is breaking, which I agree with, by the way. What signals convinced you that we've hit the ceiling of what hardware-first scaling can deliver? And what made you confident enough to build a company around the alternative?
So there's a few things in there that I'd want to see if we can like push aside and like sort of like disambiguate. So there's one premise in there that hardware has hit a ceiling. I think, firstly, the hardware that we have is absolutely incredible. The fact that we are even here is by itself a miracle on top of miracles. What we've actually hit is sort of a more of a comprehension ceiling. So the gap between what hardware can do and what the software understands and how we use it. So the problem is not so much hardware as it is software. And that gap keeps widening every generation. All right, so you look at today's systems, you know, a lot of for training workloads, people are talking about anywhere between 45 to 50% utilization. And that's at like some of the frontier labs where, you know, they have the best people working on this for months at a time, and they know how to like right size their workloads and their runs for the system that they have. And then you talk to AI companies in terms of what their inference looks like. A lot of time, it's not surprising to hear, I have under 15%. Right? And that's not because the hardware itself is flawed. It's because the software stack was designed for a certain reality, which right now is ensuring that the hardware isn't fed enough in order to get the performance. Right? So GPUs are idle most of the time waiting. They're waiting for data to arrive from memory and waiting for communication collectives to complete so that the next kernel can be scheduled. So the time between a kernel finishing and waiting for data for the next kernel to start executing is the thing that drives lower utilization right now. Right? And ALUs are basically free. Right? Data movement is the bottleneck. So the industry has largely been optimizing for the wrong thing at the wrong level for too long. The cost of moving data from memory to an ALU costs about 100 times more energy than the computation itself. So almost 70% of total system energy in a chip goes towards moving data around. The arithmetic piece consumes maybe 10 to 15%. The entire software stack has been built around how do we optimize the 10 to 15% instead of the 70%, right? The hardware is not getting simpler. It's getting far more complex. It is becoming more heterogeneous in nature, right? Because chiplets invite a certain kind of heterogeneity as well. Different memory hierarchies are different kind of heterogeneity. Different kind of interconnects are different kinds of heterogeneity. Scale up is its own kind. There's different topologies. All of that impacts software. Right? You have to take all of those things into account when you are writing good software. Right? And if you talk to some of the hyperscalers right now, they will tell you they need 1,000x more capability for basically the same power. So the binding constraint right now is how well software can exploit the system. So obviously don't go replacing hardware investment. You still need more hardware. You need better hardware. We need it faster. Like our focus at Lemurian generally is making sure you get the most out of it with the least amount of effort. In other words, our focus is maximizing useful intelligence per joule.
Oh, interesting. You know, it's an open secret that most GPU clusters run at a fraction of their theoretical performance, with much of that gap sitting in the software stack. So where does Lemurian see the most painful bottlenecks today, and why has the industry struggled to close them despite billions in infrastructure spending?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? We've known about these problems for so long, but we still haven't solved them. And that goes back to what I was saying earlier a little bit, right? Hardware has been moving faster than software, and the abstractions haven't changed in a very long time. To a large degree, you know, hardware has moved far beyond what we had, you know, 25 years ago, but the software stack is still in the same abstraction. Right? So we're still in this world of programming a single GPU at a time, assuming a compute bound and regular workload, while we're trying to program a supercomputer, right? But let's take a look at the atomic unit of like the AI economy, as it were, right? Which is generating a token from an LLM. So the chip itself was designed for a workload that's two order of magnitude more computation per byte, right? And then the way to sort of recover that is by batching, right? That's how you get the most useful work out of this. And if you process, say, 30 sequences simultaneously, you can boost utilization to, you know, 35-45%. But then you think about the production conditions, and they don't usually permit an ideal batch size, right? Because there's a lot of the things around latency and user experience and SLAs that you have to go and think about. Then there's the context length. The context length kills the gains for batch size. So there's a trade-off there. If I have a 32K token context, I can fit maybe 4 sequences on a GPU. And then if I do that, then my model flop utilization, the MFU, will fall to less than 10%. We keep evolving the workload at a faster rate than we're able to optimize things. And the direction at which AI wants to evolve and the way hardware is evolving is pulling apart the kernel model. Right? So kernels generally assume a static, explicit management with fixed launches, coarse grained data transfers, compile time decisions that can't adapt to runtime surprises, like uneven execution time due to data dependent branches or unpredictability. In exascale setups, that leads to like 70, 80% wasted cycles on just coordination and memory overhead. Right? That resulted in a system only achieving 20 to 30% of the theoretical peak. And by theoretical peak in this case, I'm referring not to the hardware flops that vendors are putting out there on their sheets, but the theoretical peak for a workload on a given system under ideal conditions. So all these static approaches that we have require conservative overallocation, and they can't predict which device will have access to what data at runtime. These are the things that need to be addressed. So the compiler world has been too conservative, and this sort of hoping things will magically get solved by better kernels, and that's what the industry's been writing, just better kernels. But better kernels only marginally move the needle. We need a radical rethink. That's much harder to do.
Yeah, interesting. You know, the software-first AI infrastructure sounds abstract, but in concrete terms, what changes for an ML team running production workloads on Lemurian stack, you know, in how their models get compiled, scheduled, executed, that they can't get from today's tools?
Yeah, so if you think about the teams today, you have many different functions of what you'd call an AI engineer. You have people who are collecting data, they're labeling data, they're cleaning it. There's people that are doing research. And like, if you go to a frontier lab, like, let's just assume that they have a split around 30% compute for R&D, 30% for large pre-training, and 30% for inference. You have to choose your bets. And once the research part is done, there's a separate team that is doing larger scale pre-training, thinking about that infrastructure, the environment, and trying to optimize it to give you the best bang for your buck on that. And you have to complete model training in a certain timeline, of course, to go in order to get a model out in the market, because there's implications if you don't. And then you think about the inference side. There's a separate team that takes these frozen weights from this model's checkpoint, and then they are optimizing it for the hardware that they're going to be running this model on. That there's a massive delta of months between when the model is done training and when it's validated to when it's deployed on this hardware. And sometimes it's different vendors, different stacks, different kernels, different conditions, different clouds, a whole bunch of problems. That dramatically slows you down. These different teams, they can't cross talk, they can't like share insights, they have to restart every single time. That's meaningfully slowing things down in a way that is not really great, because now your ideas and what you can even test is based on the inductive bias of the hardware and what that hardware wants you to do. So most ideas are actually killed based on whether or not I have kernels and infrastructure to support my ideas to begin with, and whether or not it'll run well on this hardware. Now let's talk about what are we going to eliminate, and then we can talk about where we're going. The problem is, as I said, is that this optimization is bespoke. And our design philosophy starts from one question. What if the optimized path was the default path? As in, your PyTorch model goes in, you've expressed an idea of something you want, and what happens next is different from the current stack and how we do things, in that we don't compile it at the kernel level, we compile for the system, in that we aren't building a parallelizing compiler, we are building a compiler that is natively parallel, understands the system, and that insight makes certain things possible. You stop thinking about a cluster as a collection of individual chips, and now as a single distributed computer, essentially. When you write a kernel, you're writing for a specific a part of a chip. When you write for a stack, you're just expressing computation, and the system figures out how to execute it across whatever hardware is available, and then figures out the data movement, the routing to minimize it, the scheduling, how do you overlap communication with computation, how do you adapt when things change, as they inevitably do. So now you can essentially get the maximum performance out of the system as you take an idea from a single GPU, scale it up to a large pre-training run, freeze that, and deploy onto the hardware you want on the next day instead of months later. That velocity that you gained, that is what we're giving you, while giving you portable performance.
Okay. So, you know, for years, writing to a specific accelerator was the path to peak performance. Why is hardware specificity becoming a liability for AI teams? And how can hardware agnostic software layer reverse this trend without sacrificing performance?
A different workload is going to have a different characteristic. What you would do for a monolithic LLM versus a mixture of experts LLM versus a reasoning LLM versus a tool calling an agentic LLM, they have different balances. In some cases, you can find like, yeah, if I have an agent, the right balance could end up actually being one CPU, one GPU again, instead of one CPU and four GPUs or two CPUs and eight GPUs, right? And you'd have to write for them differently. And then you find like, then you have all the chips like the MTIA and the Maya and the Trainium and the TPUs, which are also fragmented into training versus inference. And then there's the AMD chips. And then if Intel decides to release one again, and then the Qualcomms, Cerebras, and TensorFlow, and so on. I think we're ending up in a world where every single hardware that is stamped out and produced will be plugged in and will have to contribute to the AI economy. And we will end up in a world where we are right-sizing workloads to hardware in order to maximize this intelligence per joule or intelligence per dollar. So now if your software stack embeds assumptions about one vendor's hardware, which you know every single vendor stack obviously does because it's designed for that one chip architecture, you've made a strategic commitment as an organization to a shorter half-life than your production system. That's a very dangerous place to be. So your multi-year inference pipeline is optimized for hardware that could end up being obsolete in 18 months because you have to jump to the newest hardware in order to be competitive. Right? And in our case, we're not trading performance for portability. That trade-off exists in a certain world, right? Under certain constraints. We've changed the problem itself to allow us to solve those problems in a very unique way. You know, write once, run slow everywhere. Right? That used to be the case. In OpenCL tried this, many others have tried this. We produce mediocre code in every platform. That's not what we do. Our compiler is generating different optimized code for each hardware target, for each system.
All right, so assuming the next decade of AI progress comes from software rather than new silicon, how should CTOs and infrastructure leaders rethink how they evaluate cost and performance and long-term scalability? You know, what should they stop optimizing for?
A useful metric that I think people should adopt, and I haven't seen enough of this, is useful output per dollar. As in, how much useful work are you getting out of each dollar you spend on your compute? Any metric that doesn't include engineering costs should probably be retired. As in, if your infrastructure team spends, you know, 3, 4, 6, 7 months tuning a new model for a specific hardware, that is a real cost that should be factored in. If switching to a new accelerator requires rewriting your kernel library, that switching cost is real. Right? You can't ignore that. Time to production matters more today. If your answer is measured in months, your infrastructure is optimized for the past, not the future. I think that's what I'm ultimately trying to get at. In a world where new model architectures are dropping on a monthly cadence and new hardware ships every, say, 6 to 12 months, time to production becomes your most competitive variable. So the team that deploys a new model on the newest hardware fastest for the best economics is the one that wins. And if you can do that faster and get more out of it, you're obviously in a very different league. So don't think about infrastructure as a cost center you minimize and think about it as a capability that you maximize.
So a lot of AI teams are still chasing wins at the kernel or model level while system level performance is on the table. Where do you most often see organizations misjudge their real performance? And you know, what does Lemurian's approach reveal that component level optimization misses?
I think the deepest misjudgment is probably one of category error. Confusing component level efficiency with system efficiency. An organization that profiles their matrix multiply kernels, and they say they get like 80-85% of peak throughput, then you have the same for potential kernels, which are like 65-70%, they conclude that their workload in their stack is well optimized. But they've sort of only measured a part of the system, a small part. They haven't measured the end-to-end execution time of a workload. What we're sort of trying to do is say, instead of thinking about new kernels and having all these hardware-specific insights, have this full data flow graph of the computation across the entire system and not just what each operation is and what it does, but like how data moves between all of them and how do you optimize that? And where does communication overlap with computation? How do we do that well? How do we tune things for the hardware topology? Because we have our own versions of things that are like nickel-like, but they can be tuned to different infrastructures and different topologies. The waste that no one's measuring, I think, is the one that's worth the most today. And that's what we're sort of focusing on, what we're saying.
Right. So final question, Jay. New accelerators are landing every few months, each with its own programming model. What role does Lemurian software stack play in insulating developers from that churn? You know, letting them target whatever hardware makes sense without rewriting their workloads, you know, while still extracting performance that rivals, you know, hand-tuned code.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky problem. And this is where I think we're different. I don't think hand-tuned code is the problem. I actually think for most hardware, a better kernel makes your hardware look worse, right? Because you're exposing the latency of the system. So you know, the question that you need to ask yourself if you're writing kernels is at what point does better stop being better? At what point is it just vanity? And I don't see hardware diversity as a threat that we need to be managed. I think it is an advantage that we need to be exploiting. In our case, we don't have to do the things people would normally have to do, because each new system with every new single change means changes in the compiler, new bring up times, and new if there's a new memory hierarchy, changes in it, you have to go and capture that. If you rewrite kernels, update the libraries, put that in a customer's hands. In our case, we just had add a hardware model into our compiler so we can parameterize it so that it can do hardware specific optimizations. A lot of the hardware ourselves, we're very specific in terms of the problem we're solving. We understand like how to build a hardware independent compiler that is parallel, but it can do a lot of these highly optimizing things specific to systems with hardware information. It's a very, very different problem. Portable performance has always been its point of contention. And the contention has been that you're always solving for the lowest common denominator. If you have portability, it comes at the expense of performance. And if you want performance, you have to exploit the hardware to its fullest. If you are network bound and memory bound, your performance is not where you think it is. What you need to do is optimize data movement and maximize it from the point of view of the memory hierarchy of the system that you are targeting, and right size the work and place it ahead of time where it's supposed to be to intercept the memory to keep the ALUs maximally busy. It is a very, very different way of thinking about the problem. And that is how you can do this and you can address different kinds of systems, different scales, different workloads as things are changing, and you insulate yourself from all this.
Great conversation, Jay. Thank you for your time. It's a pleasure to meet you, and hopefully we can catch up later on in the year and get a status.
Absolutely. That'd be lovely.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening and have a great day.